Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Happy belated Father's Day to all the great dads out there. Thank you so much for your sacrifice, support, and commitment. Hope it was a beautiful day. It is a Monday, June 17, 2019. Great to be with you. I am going to be a guest on Morning Glory tomorrow. I'm filling in for somebody who's not there. I don't know who it is because I know Deacon Harold and Gloria are going to be there, but I'm excited. I love that show, and I think it's great. I don't know why they want to have me on, but what the heck. If they want me there, I'll be happy to talk. So much to talk about. I gave them a list of ideas of things I'd like to discuss, including Deacon Harold is so humble he won't say this, but he has been chosen and confirmed as our pre-night keynote for our Good News Marriage Cruise, which is coming up in January. He's doing a pre-night for us with a big keynote talk, and they're arranging it all at the hotel in Fort Lauderdale before we take off on our Good News cruise. So we'll be talking a little bit more about that tomorrow. Then Gloria and I'm so excited that I get to speak with Gloria. She is wonderful, and she's a hoot and a half, but she's also very loving and very direct and a great speaker. And we're speaking at the Baton Rouge Catholic Women's Conference put on by WINE, that is Women in the New Evangelization, a beautiful ministry. Check it out, CatholicVineyard.com. If you haven't checked out WINE or any of their conferences, they have book clubs, they have all kinds of cool things, and I'm on their board, so I'm a very proud member, and it's just a really terrific resource for women in the faith, and Kelly Walquist and company put on terrific conferences all over the country, and the next one's coming up in Baton Rouge, and that's close to being sold out with Kelly, Gloria, myself, Kitty Cleveland. It's going to be a great weekend that's coming up the end of July. I think they only have about 50 seats left, because the venue has, I think, 550 or something along those lines. Kelly told me the other day, and we're getting close to, I think, the 500 mark. So go to CatholicVineyard.com for more information on the conference with Gloria Purvis, myself, Kelly Walquist, Kitty Cleveland. It's going to be a great weekend. And then, of course, the Deacon Harold event will be Saturday on the 25th. The cruise leaves on January 26th, and you can find out all that information at goodnewscruise.com or by listening as you do every day to Morning Glory right here on EWTN. Okay, coming up on the program, it is going to be a good day. It's going to be a busy day as we move almost to the start of summer, which is coming up, I think, officially Thursday? Yeah, the 21st is Thursday. Is it? Or is it Friday? I have to check my calendar. Thank you, Andrew. He speaks in my head all the time. It is coming up on Friday. And speaking of this weekend, we're going to be joining a big event this weekend, including one involving this beautiful Catholic artist, Jill Metz. And we're going to be talking about art and faith. And she's coming up at about 39 minutes past the hour. I'm left-handed. I always go backwards. Sorry. First, though, right out of the gate after the break and after the news, we're going to be chatting with the D.C. Bureau Chief at Catholic News Agency, Ed Condon. We're going to follow up from last week. We did a preview with Dr. Matthew Bunsen at the beginning of the week last week, a week from today, if you recall, where we discussed what was coming up at the Baltimore Spring Conference of the USCCB. So Ed covered this, and he's going to be joining us after the fact to kind of dive in the measures that were passed and if you have any questions about them and what the reaction is from Catholic followers of Catholic News Agency and what people are saying. So Ed Condon joining us at 15 minutes past the hour, then artist Jill Metz at 39 past. And then it is a Monday, which means we always guide you to the Bible as in basic instructions. Before leaving Earth, Gail Buckley from Catholic Scripture Study International with our Bible verse of the week. And you know what St. Jerome said, that ignorance of Scripture is ignorance of Christ. I love this verse. Love this verse. 1 Timothy 3:15. If I am delayed, you may know how one ought to behave in the household of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and the foundation of truth. This is very deep, especially for Catholic Christians. And Gail will talk about that as we wrap up a Monday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Again, a belated happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. A lot of news, as I mentioned, to get through this morning. So let's do that right now on a Monday. Well, the Archbishop of Kansas City, Joseph Nauman, has decried attempts to repeal the Hyde Amendment, insisting that American taxpayers should not be coerced into funding the killing of unborn babies. Nauman, who is also the head of the United States Bishops Pro-Life Committee, saying that the government has no business obliging citizens to fund abortion. Notre Dame Cathedral celebrated the consecration of its altar 850 years ago. A mass held at Notre Dame on Saturday, the first held since there was a devastating fire 2 months ago. Only 30 were able to attend, and the mass was held in a side chapel that held the beautiful relics of the Crown of Thorns. A fire on April 15th destroying the historic wooden roof, but the main structure of the building was spared. Hope, which is more than mere optimism, gives one a deep-rooted confidence in the love and care of God, no matter what has happened, the Holy Father said yesterday. He said hope does not expire because it is based on the fidelity of God. The hope of the Spirit is not even optimism. Born deeper, he said, it rekindles at the bottom of the heart the certainty of being precious because we're loved. He said this on June 16th yesterday. He was speaking at a mass in Italy on the eastern coast during a visit to the Archdiocese of Camerino, San Severino, La Marche. That was the area of those affected by the earthquakes. It's about 2 hours east of Rome, and it's closer to the Adriatic, La Marche is on the eastern border, if you go up the Adriatic. Beautiful area, but devastated by earthquakes 2 years ago. Actually, both in 2016 and 2017. It's Central East where these things occurred. The mass was said in the square outside the cathedral in Camerino, which is still under reconstruction after being damaged in the earthquake. In his homily, Francis spoke to those who suffered damage, injury, or loss due to the earthquakes. In other news this morning, the Chicago Police Department remembering fathers who died in the line of duty. Father Dan Brandt, a police chaplain, speaking during the Father's Day Mass yesterday.
Through the mercy of God, rest in peace.
That memorial paying tribute to all Chicago City police officers who have died in the line of duty, especially those who lost their lives in the last year. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo standing firm regarding Iran and its responsibility for the attack last week on oil tankers in the Persian Gulf.
These were attacks by the Islamic Republic of Iran on commercial shipping on the freedom of navigation with a clear intent to deny transit through the strait. This was on the Gulf of Oman side of the Strait of Hormuz.
On Fox News Sunday, Pompeo said it's unmistakable what happened there. He said his accusation based on the intelligence, the weapons used, the level of expertise needed to execute the operation, and recent similar Iranian attacks on shipping. Senator Tom Cotton, meanwhile, says Iran deserves military retaliation for its unprovoked attacks on oil tankers.
Unprovoked attacks on commercial shipping warrant a retaliatory military strike against the Islamic Republic of Iran.
On CBS's Face the Nation, the Arkansas Republican insisting the president has the power to order retaliation strikes from the U.S. military without congressional approval. He argued the president has the authority to act to defend American interests. Cotton, an Iraq war veteran, saying a military strike will make it clear we will not tolerate any kind of attacks on commercial shipping on the open seas. The president says he wants health care to be a pillar of his 2020 reelection campaign. In an interview over the weekend on ABC News, the president said the public will soon get an idea of his health care plan.
We already have the concept of the plan, and it'll be much better.
Tell people what the plan is.
Yeah, well, we'll be announcing that in about 2 months, maybe less.
The president saying health care is a big piece of unfinished business from his first term that he plans to tackle if he is reelected. The president explaining his administration has stabilized Obamacare and made it serviceable, but he says it has a lot of work to be done on it yet. A group of Jimmy Buffett fans say they became seriously ill during an April trip to the Dominican Republic. Reports are that 47 members of the Central Oklahoma Parrothead Association got sick. Many of them say so seriously they couldn't even leave their hotel rooms. Several Americans have gotten sick and died in the Dominican Republic resort hotels in recent months, but the government is still insisting those resorts are safe. The National Weather Service is confirming the touchdown of several tornadoes in central Indiana over the weekend. The mayor of Beech Grove, Dennis Buckley, says he's just glad no one was hurt when the tornado hit his town over the weekend.
We'll clean this up, and these buildings will be rebuilt, so we'll come back stronger than ever. But, you know, it just takes a little time.
No injuries have been reported, but thousands were without power yesterday. And deaths by suicide and substance abuse are at an all-time high for millennials. John Auerbach, president of Trust for America's Health, says in California, alcohol, drug, and suicide deaths increased by nearly 30% from 1999 to 2017.
There are a very large number of Californians who've lost their lives just in the last year that we have data. More than 14,000 Californians.
The Pain in the Nation report finding that between 2007 and 2017, drug deaths among 18 to 34-year-olds had more than doubled across the nation. Auerbach says millennials are being particularly impacted by the opioid crisis. By 2025, it's projected deaths by substance abuse and suicide in California could increase another 37%. And one person is dead, seven hurt after a shooting at a graduation party in southwest Philly. Police Commissioner Richard Ross Jr. said yesterday that four of the victims were teens.
Those people sustained gunshot wounds, mostly to the leg, maybe one to the arm. We haven't confirmed that. None of those are fatalities. We also have four adults that sustained gunshot wounds to various parts of their body. They're all in their 20s.
Police say about 60 people were at the party Sunday night when a gunman opened fire. The person who died, not one of the teens. Police have not made an arrest in the shooting. And finally, in our news segment, at about 12 minutes past the hour on a Monday, a good news story. Mark Mayfield reports a Utah teen inventing a new cap to protect the hearing of premature babies.
14-year-old Olivia Washburn is the creator of a specially designed cap for preemies to wear in newborn intensive care units. It started as a science project last year, as the cap is designed to reduce harmful sounds and can be adjusted for a snug fit over the baby's head. The invention has won several awards, including the $7,000 grand prize in the Utah Entrepreneur Challenge. Washburn's main motivation came because she was a preemie baby born 6 weeks early. She currently has two patents pending, and if testing goes well, Washburn hopes to get it into the marketplace in about 18 months.
Hope you're having a beautiful Monday, June 17th, 2019. It's EWTN. And this program, Catholic Connection, a co-production of both EWTN and the Ave Maria Radio Network. Great resources all over the place. AveMariaRadio.net and EWTN.com. Speaking of great resources, one of my faves, Catholic News Agency, Ed Condon from CNA is up next with a follow-up to the Bishops' Conference and the measures that were passed to protect regarding the sex abuse crisis. 877-573-7825. It's a Monday, and you're listening to EWTN.
Our family had been going through crisis. Little by little, we just found ourselves drifting completely away. I was afraid to go back. I mean, I cried the first time I received the sacraments again. Cried because I was back and because I had allowed God to become a part of me again. It's united our family. There's peace in our home that we didn't have before.
If you've been away from the Catholic Church for any reason, visit CatholicsComeHome.org today.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
This program is brought to you in part by Charity Mobile, a proud partner of Ave Maria Radio for over 10 years. Charity Mobile is the pro-life cell phone company and has sent nearly $2 million to thousands of pro-life charities. 4G LTE coverage is available nationwide, and 5% of your monthly plan cost goes to your favorite pro-life charity. A video introduction is available at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile, everyday living, effortless giving. CharityMobile.com.
Thank you.
On the phone with Ed Condon from the Catholic News Agency, who covered in depth the Bishops' Conference meeting last week. And we've got a number of different stories that are still posted at CatholicNewsAgency.com. And this morning, we're going to be taking a look more specifically. And by the way, if you have a question, the phone number is 877-573-7825. The measures that were passed in response to the abuse crisis, three specifically. Ed, thanks for joining us. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so what were the three measures? Kind of like recap it for us if people were not in tune last week when all this was going on.
Sure. So the first thing the bishops did was they signed what they called a statement affirming our episcopal commitments, which was basically a statement morally committing all of the bishops, again, to holding themselves to the same sort of standards of accountability and good behavior that they all assumed when they were made bishops in the first place, but also specifically holding them to the same standards that their priests have been held to since 2002. The second thing that they did was they passed a series of directives, they called them, which basically apply the Pope's new universal law on episcopal accountability, Vos Estis Lux Mundi, which came into force at the beginning of this month, and apply that to the American context, basically bringing a law that was written for the whole world down, really, to make it sort of locally applicable in the United States. And the third thing they did was they passed what they called a series of protocols, which are really a sort of explainer document on what sitting diocesan bishops can do to restrict the ministry of their predecessors when they've retired or been, resigned under a cloud of scandal.
What, in terms of positive impact and reality and practical application, do you think these measures will have?
Well, I think they lay out a good blueprint for how we can hope to avoid situations like McCarrick and Bransfield in the future. One of the key parts of the directives implementing the Pope's global law was the bishop said, well, we're going to have a national independent reporting mechanism, hotline number and online place where anyone can go and make a complaint against a bishop, and then that can be independently tracked to make sure it's getting to the right independent layperson and the right archbishop to investigate and go to Rome. So you have this sort of external and independent mechanism for tracking all of these complaints in future. So, I mean, some of the worst things we've heard about Theodore McCarrick and Bishop Michael Bransfield has been that, you know, people were complaining about them for a period of years, and everyone who heard anything or had these complaints sort of sent to them was either turning a blind eye or not doing nearly enough to advance it up the chain. And now we have this built-in system where lay involvement is really going to be central to how these things are handled.
Is it too little too late, or do you think this will really have a positive impact?
Well, I don't think it's ever going to be too late. You know, if you want to stop something from happening in the future, you can never be too late. But I do think that this is these are good, sober reforms. But I think what the bishops really missed in Baltimore last week was there wasn't any real, clear, urgent moral voice saying, wait a minute, these guys, the bad guys, the people now that everyone thinks of when they think of a Catholic bishop in the United States, Theodore McCarrick, Michael Bransfield, these aren't us. These are, you know, these are definitely a minority of criminal members of the hierarchy. And I think what it was a real missed opportunity for the bishops there was to stand up and distance themselves from their misbehaving brother bishops and say, we're not like that. You know, we don't recognize anything of ourselves in these people. And unfortunately what they did was opt for sort of collegial expressions of group remorse and, you know, definitely recognizing what they call the just fury of the faithful. But I think there's a danger there. By seeming to speak with one voice, it makes it look like they're on the other side from the faithful with this, which many of them simply aren't.
We're talking with Ed Condon, the Bureau Chief of Catholic News Agency in Washington. The phone number is 877-573-7825. Following up on last week's spring meeting in Baltimore, which he covered, and taking a look specifically at the new measures to handle and investigate sexual abuse allegations that were debated and or passed at the USCCB Spring Assembly, 877-573-7825. I think this is what is so frustrating, and you share this as well, is that we just want them to, and I asked this of Matt Bunsen last week before the conference started, that we want them to understand the level of frustration and exasperation. especially among faithful Catholics who aren't walking away. I mean, we're just, it's like Raymond was talking, and you and I, being Catholic journalists, we're so tired of talking about this stuff. We don't want to talk about it. We want to move on, but we have to keep, as reporters and as people concerned who have a platform in the Catholic faith, we have to make sure this is being addressed.
I think that's exactly right. If I have a criticism of the bishops sort of as a body, it's not with their will to move on or their desire to see that this never happens again. I mean, we looked at three fairly unanimous votes on Thursday last week passing these measures. The corporate commitment is there. But what's missing is really the shared outrage, the sense of urgency that really, I think, it's not that the bishops don't understand that the laity are deeply upset, deeply wounded, deeply furious about these things. I don't get the sense they understand the level of precariousness that comes with it for the authority of the church in the pews.
So how can we get that across to them or help them understand? What else can we do respectfully, do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for showing up and trying to meet your local bishop. I mean, every bishop in his diocese has a cathedral, has an obligation to say Mass publicly for his faithful. And I think there's a difference between crowds of angry people waving signs outside the cathedral every Sunday, you know, saying down with all bishops and this sort of thing. And just faithful Catholics turning up and saying, well, we want to meet and share with our bishop exactly what we're feeling. What I really hope we'd see is bishops, you know, placing themselves in the context of the ordinary faithful and going around their parishes and not conducting necessarily formal listening sessions where at the front of a room taking questions through a microphone, but, you know, really being out and amongst the people, you know, in the pews on a Sunday, standing outside parish churches after Sunday Mass. And if they can't come to the faithful, I think the faithful can go to them.
And if you have a question for Ed Condon, phone lines are open, 877-573-7825, 877-573-7825. Let's go to Walt, who's calling in Melbourne, Pennsylvania. Again, the phone number is 877-573-7825. Walt, what's on your mind this morning?
Well, I'm not going to walk away from the church because it's the church that Jesus established. But there seems to be a stunning indifference to get to the bottom of how McCarrick was able to operate so long. And I suspect some of those guys knew about him, and they're afraid that their names are going to come out in the woodwork, especially those who were recommended by McCarrick, Cardinal Supich, Tobin, and Farrell.
All right, so your concern is that we haven't, and I agree with you, I want to hear more about who knew what and when. We still don't know yet, Ed, about McCarrick in terms of all the connections, because you know someone to move up those lines, those ranks, and have so much power, especially, I think you guys just had an article on the Papal Foundation. I mean, there has to be a lot of people who knew what was going on, as Walt pointed out.
I think that's true, and I think one of the great unanswered questions, and this was raised specifically by Bishop Strickland of Tyler, Texas, over the course of last week.
God bless.
We need a full reckoning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We need a full reckoning for the McCarrick thing. And so one of the interesting things is Rome, in the Secretariat of State, is charged with compiling a sort of global investigation into McCarrick. We know that the Archdiocese of Washington has finished its own review of files, which were pretty extensive, and sent their conclusions to Rome for inclusion in that wider study. We Catholic News Agency spoke to Cardinal Joseph Tobin of Newark over the course of last week, and he said that he would like to make more information public on what he's discovered in his own archdiocese, but between Rome and an ongoing state's attorney investigation, he's limited in terms of what he can release publicly right now. And that's all well and good, but I think you're absolutely right in saying that the problem is never so much discovering what one individual bishop did wrong, but it's the network around them. And I think this is what scandalized a lot of people about the Bransfield situation, is it wasn't so much what he did wrong, horrible as it was that when a report on it was sent to Rome, they redacted the names of the bishops who'd been beneficiaries of it. And I think this is really one of the real problems in getting to the bottom of any instance of abuse of office or other kinds of misconduct by a bishop, is it touches so many others. And convincing the church authorities that we are not likely to ever let go until we can be sure that, you know, whatever this problem is, has been pulled out by the roots, that's something that we need to keep the pressure on about.
Yeah, because we understand that there's always going to be sinners, and this is nothing new under the sun, as Ecclesiastes says. I mean, if you look at the life of St. Catherine, St. Francis, St. Teresa of Avila, St. John Vianney, and so many more, we know that Pope Francis says the church is not a sanctuary for saints, but a hospital for sinners. But because of what happened with McCarrick and the connections, I mean, just any, you don't have to be an investigative journalist to figure this out, that there had to be a whole network working to protect him, or turning a deaf ear and a blind eye, or both. And this is, we have to get to the bottom of this, because if we don't, it can happen again. Because look at what happened, for example, with Bransfield in the midst of uncovering all these things and the ongoing issues that were being raised. Then we hear this big story about this bishop and just horrendous things financially, as well as charges of sexual harassment. So we can't, it's not that we're like pit bulls just trying to hang on to this for the heck of it. We need to get to the bottom of it, or else it's not going to change.
That's exactly right. And this is a point I had to make to a number of bishops last week in Baltimore, who would, in the nicest possible way, have the opinion of, with McCarrick has been laicized, can you let it go? And what we were having to say to them over and over again is, no, we can't, because until we know how McCarrick happened, we can't be confident that it won't happen again.
Exactly. All right, we've got a lot of calls. Rob from Louisiana on line 3, Eric in Georgia, and Susan from New Hampshire. We'll try to get to all your calls and others. All the lines are full. We'll be right back. More with D.C. Bureau Chief Ed Condon from the Catholic News Agency.
Bishop Robert Barron.
Find out, in any cultural situation, who's the Lord? There's somebody or some principle, some figure, some institution that has central importance in that culture. Whether it's king, whether it's the military, who knows what it is? Go up and down the centuries. What's the Lord? The declaration of the Lordship of Jesus will always be a challenge to whatever that reigning Lord happens to be. The Lord today is my personal freedom. I decide what my life is. I decide who I am. I decide everything from my gender to the ultimate meaning of my life. Now that personal freedom is so powerful that it's become the Lord. To evangelize the culture is therefore to challenge that and to say, no, it's not your own ego, not your own freedom that's Lord. Jesus determines the meaning of your life. Jesus is the center of your life, not your own freedom.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
What is God's most amazing quality? Surely it must be his enormous mercy towards sinners. This mercy is revealed in the gospel through Jesus Christ. Jesus' very name means salvation from sin. The Eucharist is the sacrament of redemption, we learn from the Catechism of the Catholic Church. In order to receive this mercy, however, we must know and acknowledge that we indeed have sinned and are in need of forgiveness. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, St. John's Gospel reminds us. But if we confess our sins, God will cleanse us of all unrighteousness. John Paul II asserted that conversion requires convincing of sin. As a physician must probe a wound before treating it, God, through his word and his spirit, casts a living light on sin. But along with the sting of conscience comes the salve of the certainty of redemption. So the Spirit of Truth is also the consoler. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
Ed Condon is a D.C. Bureau Chief at the Catholic News Agency, and follow-up of the coverage that they had, great coverage last week, regarding the measures that were addressed and adapted and adopted, all three, at the conference last week, 877-573-7825. Rob from Louisiana, what's your question? Good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is this. Does the retroactivity of the passage of these measures go back to the Charter for the Protection of Youth in 2001 or 2, and then come forward from there to allow investigation of the auxiliary bishops who were working in the Diocese of Boston and with Cardinal Law at the time?
Well, I think the answer to that is we're not entirely sure. Vos Estes Lux Mundi, which is the universal law that Pope Francis promulgated, is really a document of several different parts, and some parts are very clearly new law. They're new procedural law on how to handle complaints against bishops. Now, new law in canon law, as in civil law, this is my understanding, can't be retroactive. You can't put a law in place that applies to things that happened before they were a crime. But other parts of it do appear to be an instruction on how a law is to be interpreted. Now, in canon law, an instruction and authoritative interpretation on the law can be retroactive. So I think in a lot of these places, there will be instances where misconduct with an adult was previously considered to not rise to the level of a canonical crime, but under the new and expanded definition of vulnerable adult, for example, in both STs, this could well open up a new stream of crimes that are still well within the canonical statute of limitations period and could be up for prosecution. I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see a little of that.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Eric in Georgia, calling in Line 7. Hey, Eric, thanks for holding. What's your question or comment? Eric?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
My question is, what degree of confidence can we have in the bishop's new regulations or attempted self-regulation, given the fact that their safe environments program has not been fully implemented, and many parishes, at least in my experience in the Archdiocese of Atlanta, the parish that I worked most closely in, it was the safe environments program was routinely ignored. And when that was brought to the attention, when I brought it to the attention of the Archdiocese, they equivocated. We went back and forth, and finally they just circled the wagons and said, speak to our attorneys. And it seems that at each juncture, the bishops are distancing themselves from their own office and responsibility, where how do you legislate a bishop to simply be honest and pray?
Mm-hmm.
When
mm-hmm.
really, you know, they're trying to abdicate to the laity a responsibility that is intrinsically theirs.
Okay, so the main question, Eric, and you bring up some important points, is how do we have confidence? Is that your main question? I just want to make sure we're honing in on your concerns this morning.
Yes, how do we have confidence that they're going to follow through on any current implementation, and isn't really, in the end, all of this simply just an effort to abdicate responsibility that Christ, through their ordination, has invested in them personally.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Ed, your comments to Eric's questions and concerns.
I think there's a very important theme to everything he was saying. In fact, I wrote a piece on this for First Things magazine last week just ahead of the bishops' conference. What the bishops are very good at is treating scandals and the abuse crisis and things like that as a problem to be managed out of existence. They're very effective at that. I mean, it's worth noting that individual cases like the one he raised that I can't speak to because I don't know the details, but by and large, the Dallas Charter and the Essential Norms of 2002 have worked and worked spectacularly well. The Catholic Church trains more people, lay and clerics, for safeguarding than I think any other organization in this country. Children are, you know, and it's pretty much an empirically provable fact at this point, your children are safer in a Catholic Church than virtually any other institution going. The response that has been procedural institutional works. Now, the problem with that is you're managing a problem. What we need here is radical renewal from the
mm-hmm.
bishops. I think what was said in the call was perfectly true, which is, in the end, the buck stops with the bishops, and it needs to, because they're the ones who are the successors to the apostles. And I think there is this tension, and you could see a little bit of it emerging in the debate in Baltimore, where bishops were saying, it's not our job to lumber the laity with our own failings. It's not the job of the laity to police us. It's our job to convert. And I think this is something that really a lot of lay members of the church are waiting to see in the bishops, which is basically a radical conversion, a series of personal renewals, which in the end, you're absolutely right. You can't legislate or create a law to make people good or holy or to always choose to do the right thing. That's something that ultimately comes from your own interior life. It's one of the reasons the Pope sent all the U.S. bishops on a retreat in Mundelein Seminary in January this year and sent over his personal preacher to the papal household, Father Cantalamessa. And this was one of the themes he preached on, and one of the things the Pope warned them against is, you know, bureaucratic answers are not full answers in this case. What needs to happen first is there needs to be personal conversion and radical renewal among bishops.
Can you stay with us after the break? Because we have a lot of other calls, and I don't want to drop these calls. But I think that what he was saying is so important. And this is what we're feeling. And you and I were talking about it during the break. That there's even though we have great pockets of faith, and I'm very blessed in the Archdiocese of Detroit, we have a lot going on, and we have good leadership, and we have growth, and we have, I mean, all kinds of conferences, and Unleash the Gospel has taken hold. And I think sometimes we can get complacent if we're in an area that's growing, and that is, not that we don't have problems, but there's a real effort and an involvement on the part of the leadership, both the religious and the laity, to make a difference. That's not the case across the country, and I don't know if the bishops are aware of how many people are really going through a crisis of faith over this. And these are people who aren't even technically, quote-unquote, victims in terms of being abused or having a family member abused, but they're heartbroken and they're confused and they're like, what in the heck is going on?
That's right. I think one of the things that the Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI addressed in his essay that he released a couple of weeks ago was he really made this wonderfully articulated point that every crime of abuse by a priest or a bishop is a crime against the faith, because there are these cascading tiers of victims. Yes, there's the first and most important victim is the one who's been abused, and then those in their immediate circle whose lives are materially impacted. But whenever one of these abuse scandals happens, it impacts the faith of thousands. All the people who place their trust in this person as a minister of the church, who's standing there in persona Christi, have their faith take a serious hit. And I think really the bishops, I think, have an understanding, at least many of the ones that I spoke to, of the depth of the problem that this has caused for the faithful, but they still lack a sense of the urgency of that problem.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, we have to take a break. I want to put out the phone number again. We have a lot of really good calls, so we're going to move Jill back a little bit, and if we have to, we can even reschedule her for tomorrow, because I don't want to ignore these calls. The phone number is 877-573-7825. Obviously, this is a big concern for all of us still, and that's why you're calling in. Again, the number is 877-573-7825. Ed Condon is the Bureau Chief in D.C. for the Catholic News Agency, talking with us this morning on the three new measures that were passed to investigate the sexual abuse allegations in the Catholic Church that were discussed and passed, as we mentioned, at the conference in Baltimore last week. More of your comments and questions up next, and then we'll have Jill on a little bit later. 877-573-7825. It is a Monday. You're listening to Catholic Connection, a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN.
Stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
the Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are committed.
As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
We recently prevailed in a lawsuit filed in an Oklahoma federal court by Raja E. Fatia, a Muslim and a board member of CARE Oklahoma, against Chad and Nicole Neal, the owners of an Oklahoma gun range. Fatia was represented by lawyers from CARE, the ACLU, and a large New York law firm, the usual suspects. The American Freedom Law Center represented the Neals. The controversy arose when in 2015, Fatia entered the Neal's gun range armed with a loaded military-issue handgun strapped to his side, a military-style rifle slung over his shoulder, magazines loaded with approximately 140 rounds of 9mm ammunition, a concealed recording device in his pocket, and a dangerous agenda. To create a controversy with armed individuals at the gun range, hoping that he would not be allowed to fire his weapons, so he could file this meritless lawsuit and run to the media with his prearranged Islamophobia narrative, knowing that the liberal media would willingly serve as an echo chamber for his spurious claim of discrimination. CARE's lawsuit was dismissed with prejudice. CARE's extremely reckless and dangerous attempt to set up a lawsuit to make a political point has failed. Apparently, CARE and the ACLU didn't want to put CARE's nefarious ties to terrorism on trial, so they caved in. And in the end, the good guys won yet again. I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel for the American Freedom Law Center, bringing you this Faith and Freedom Minute. You can learn more about the American Freedom Law Center and its fight for your faith and freedom by visiting our website and liking us on Facebook.
appreciate the patience of artist Jill Metz, who's going to be with us tomorrow instead of today because we have full lines. And I really pray that we have some bishops listening this morning so they can hear the pain in the hearts of the people who love the church and have no, as Walt said, no intention of leaving, but they want answers and they deserve answers. We all do. And we respectfully continue to bring up this issue. Okay, let's see. Who is next? I think it's Liz calling from Avon Lake, Ohio. And by the way, if you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Ed Condon, the bureau chief in D.C. for the Catholic News Agency. Liz, what's your comment or question this morning? Thanks for your patience.
Hey, sure. It's an honor and a privilege. Thank you. I had a question and then a comment about some corollaries I'm observing, okay? My question initially is, the bishops have indicated some kind of a lay review board or laity being involved. Mm-hmm. Are they planning to appoint these people themselves? Has that been specified?
Ed?
Well, so the plan at the moment for dealing with complaints against bishops is they want to have an independent lay person in every metropolitan archdiocese, which is what's supposed to receive a complaint against a bishop, and also one in every senior suffragan diocese to handle anything that comes in about the metropolitan archbishop. The bishops themselves will be responsible for appointing them, and they are going to be drawing on a list of people and a set of criteria that's going to be published by the bishops' conference, we're told, before Labor Day. But really, we're not expecting a lot of surprises in who they're going to be picking. They're going to be picking, really, from their own diocesan review boards that have already been set up. The, you know, former criminal justice investigators and retired judges, independent attorneys, therapists, these sort of people that the church has already been using, you know, as I was saying earlier, to very effective ends since 2002. So the pool of talent that they can draw from is pretty deep. The important thing is making sure that they have the job spec right, and making sure that they have the person named and in position in time for when the national hotline goes live.
Well, I suppose that's a substantial answer. I appreciate that. My concern as a layperson is that this is just business as usual. These guys are just policing themselves, which is what they've done since 2002. And by the way, the Dallas Charter said nothing about the bishops being responsible. Mm-hmm. It was all priests on down. The other thing that I want to point out, which seems to be sort of a glaring event that nobody's talking about, is that we've got the Cardinal or Archbishop Vigano, who's in hiding for fear of his life because of the gay mafia that's present in our church. So these guys in the USCCB, which, by the way, is sort of part and parcel with the whole thing, out of, 50 years now, $300 million of our money has not gone to one single pro-life cause. It's going to these weird Saul Alinsky-type things that are all grassroots organized efforts from these weirdo organizations that are pro-abortion, pro-Planned Parenthood, and, you know, pro-homosexualism, okay? So my point is we've got this very tentacle-like network that just last week or 2 weeks ago, Vigano, who's in hiding for fear of his life, has pointed out is a mafia-type program, and he's even calling out our pontiff because he himself has covered up things like Zanketa from down in South America, who's been exposed as not a pedophile but a homosexual pederast or has issues with pornographic pictures.
Okay, Liz, I don't want to cut you off, but we've got full lines, so let me have Ed respond to your concerns. And again, I just want to let you know we've got full lines, so I've got to allow other people to get on, which is why I need to interrupt you. I apologize, but I think we gave you a lot of time, so I do appreciate your call and your holding, and I want to let Ed respond. Ed, go ahead.
Well, so a couple of things that were raised there. The first is that, yeah, I think there is a business-as-usual mentality amongst a lot of the bishops, and in many ways, I think that they've been lulled into a false sense of security by the success of the Dallas Charter and the USCCB norms. You mentioned that they were never held to the same standards as priests, and from a legal perspective, that's true because the Bishops' Conference doesn't have the authority to impose laws on its own members because every bishop answers exclusively and only to the Pope. But they did sign in 2002 a commitment to apply the Charter to themselves, and this is something they strengthened and made more explicit last week with this affirmation of episcopal commitments. One thing I would say about the USCCB is there's a lot of times The bishops themselves even want to see it do more than it's actually able to do. The bishops' conference is not intended to be an authoritative body in the church. It's meant to be a sort of discussion forum, because in the end, the buck stops with every bishop in his own diocese. Now, that having been said, the USCCB does fantastic work. I've seen it at firsthand, reporting on it here in Washington, D.C., on pro-life issues, on engaging with the government at all levels, that really the USCCB is an organizing force for representing the church's values and pro-life ethics at the national and local levels has been very, very good. So I would go into bat for them on that one. As for Archbishop Vigano, when he released his initial report nearly a year ago now, he had a lot of things in there that were causes for grave concern. We reported on substantiating a lot of them at the Catholic News Agency. But it's also worth pointing out that there is, I think, been a focus on Pope Francis and his role, particularly with regards to Vigano and the McCarrick allegations. But one thing as Catholics we have to be prepared to do is to say Theodore McCarrick rose to prominence in the Church over a period of decades and across three pontificates. And if we want hard answers to hard questions, we have to be prepared to understand that this is going to touch generations in the church in Rome and in the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think this was talked about. Phil Lawler mentioned this on Raymond's show on Thursday night, that it's not only with this papacy, but we do have to look at what happened in terms of with Benedict and with Pope St. John Paul II under his pontificate, because this goes, as you said, so far back. All right, I'm trying to think who was next, because there's been people who have been holding. Susan, thanks for your patience calling from New Hampshire. Good morning. What's your question or your comment? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Oh, hi. I'm sorry. I missed that. I just wanted to say a couple things that the CNA is really important right now, because the indignity that we feel, I guess the point that we feel the indignity is that there is business as usual. McCarrick would have had a lot of partners all those years. You just were talking about that.
Mm-hmm.
He would have had a lot of partners that are wearing mitres right now. And of course, they're not going to go forward and say, there's no I don't hear the repentance. I don't hear sorrow for sin or the bad example. These are the things that are creating everybody sins, everybody falls. So Bishop, it's okay. You say, please be sorry for your sins and let's move forward. But if you're not repenting, how can we move forward? But I think the new agency, what I'm hoping is that they don't let go of McCarrick. And because that you say, oh, it's not charity, you know, he's already done. But without truth, there is no charity.
Right.
And right now, what we need is truth.
Right. We don't have the answers yet. You're absolutely right, Susan. And that's why we keep talking about it. And I think you heard Ed mention earlier that they've been accused of, oh, why don't you just let it go? But we don't know who knew what when. I mean, this is a basic, Ed, this is basic journalism 101. We still don't have those basic questions answered at this point.
That's right, and I think this goes to the credibility of all of the things the bishops are trying to do, even with the best of intentions, to make sure that another McCarrick never happens. We can't know that another McCarrick will never happen until we know how the first McCarrick happened.
Absolutely. Susan, thank you so much. Appreciate your patience for holding on. Let's go to, I think, Kelly, line 2 in New Jersey. What's your question or comment? Thanks for calling and holding, Kelly.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say that, first of all, to back up the man who called about the Archdiocese of Atlanta. So that's Wilton Gregory, who is now in Washington. So we have to acknowledge that there is a network of men in power who are wolves, clearly wolves, and they can say all the beautiful words and do everything that they pretend, but there's a network that is actually thwarting the efforts to get to the bottom of this. Because there's still cardinals in the U.S. who have clear associations and long-term associations with McCarrick. And nobody's getting to the bottom of it because they're thwarting the efforts of that.
Okay, well, so, we have to have, before we just can't throw out accusations, and I understand your concerns, but we have to be careful. And as journalists, we have to have attribution and be able to back things up. So there may be legitimate concerns about particular bishops, but we have to be specific when we're talking about this, Kelly. So it's not fair just to throw out and say this bishop or that bishop. We have to have specifics, but I understand your concerns, and Ed, I'll let you address what she's saying.
Well, so what I think is interesting here is, for example, when we're talking about McCarrick and the network that helped him rise and sustain himself in power for so long, we don't have any real answers in terms of how that happened, who was involved. But one thing we do know is that the answers are there to be had. The truth is out there. Specifically, it's out there in the archives of the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. It's in the archives of the Archdiocese of Newark in New Jersey. And it's in the Secretary of State's Department in Rome. Now, how much of this is eventually going to come out and be released by them is the real question. And I think this will be the measure by which the sincerity of the hierarchy to repent and move past McCarrick can be measured. One thing that I'm always struck by is bishops were calling for more and more lay involvement last week. In some cases, they were getting very head up and saying, we need to write it into law. We need to not, you know, this can't be optional. We don't need to encourage each other or even say we should do this, or we need to say that we have to have these lay people involved. And one thing that was sort of being quietly whispered around is, you know, in the light of the Bransfield report and certainly some things to do with the McCarrick case, is that the only way of really guaranteeing transparency may be lay people, because lay people tend to leak to the press more freely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a problem. You look at, for example, the Emeritus Archbishop of Washington, D.C., Cardinal Wuerl. In terms of his handling of McCarrick, as near as anyone can figure out, and we've dug as hard and far as we can on it, he doesn't appear to have put a foot wrong in terms of what he was supposed to do by the book. The problem with Cardinal Wuerl has been he's absolutely refused to talk about it. And he's denied, you know, knowing what he clearly knew, and he's denied doing what he clearly did, even if it was the right thing. And I think bringing a real culture of transparency to the hierarchy of the church is going to require, well, it may require a generational change and nothing short of that.
Right. I also, too, want to put out just a note of caution and weigh in on this as we wrap up, because this is very passionate to us. It's very important. We're very hurt by it. We need to get to the bottom of it, and we keep covering it on Catholic Connection, Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic News Agency, The World Over, EWTN News Nightly, The Register, all of our outlets and others out there, such as Catholic World Report and our Sunday Visitor, the good solid papers and outlets that we can count on. But we have to be careful, and this is no disrespect to our last caller, to assume that because there's one issue of a level of problem in a particular area that automatically somebody is accused of this and connected to it. If we want truth, then we have to be careful not to jump to conclusions and throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I'm not saying that there aren't particular problems in these different areas that were mentioned today, but it's very important to make sure that if we want the truth, that we have to be willing to make sure we're being accurate when we are discussing these things. And I'll let you have the last word, Ed. Go ahead.
I would just say yes, and I think this is the most important thing happening in Catholic media and journalism today. We get a lot of flack sometimes on social media and other things saying that we're being insufficiently hard on the bishops, for example, but in the end, we're fulfilling what we consider to be a real ministry of truth, a vocation to tell the truth with respect and love for the hierarchy. You know, we're an independent news organization. We don't get any money from the hierarchical church in any way, but what we do is we offer our service to the ministry of truth, and that doesn't mean writing splenetic commentary when we're angry. It means going out and getting the facts as best we can and presenting just those facts and analyzing them and presenting really a service to the truth, not to what we think is going on or what we suspect or what we fear, but always to the truth.
Yeah, and I think, too, that some people just want to automatically assume the worst because we're frustrated and we just roll our eyes. We have to be very careful about that, and I can't stress that enough, and I also glad you brought out the point that you don't receive any money from the bishops or the USCCB, neither do we at Ave Maria Radio, though we're often accused of that, and that is not true. We are not on anybody's payroll. We raise our own money, and we're independent, and so we're doing this on our own, so we're not beholden in terms of, you know, being accused of being the establishment media, as we've been called, which is highly inaccurate and unfair, and very easy, by the way, to uncover who's getting money from whom, because it's a matter of public record. So if anybody says that in regards to a particular news agency in the Catholic world that's on the payroll, you can check it out. And if an agency is saying that, falsely accusing someone, and is still admitting it and saying this without checking out, then they're a faulty news agency, not us. Ed, thanks so much. Where do we find you online for future coverage, and what can we expect next?
You can absolutely find everything I or anyone else at the Catholic News Agency is writing at catholicnewsagency.com. As for what happens next, well, we've got a busy summer ahead of us, I'm fairly sure. We had a working document for the Special Assembly of the Synod of Bishops coming up in October on the Amazon. We're still expecting the Pope's new constitution for the Roman Curia, so there's a lot still to come.
And we will have you on again. Thanks for your great work at CatholicNewsAgency.com. We'll be right back.
The EWTN home video highlight for May is the story of Father John Sullivan. A Protestant born into a life of privilege, he left everything to follow God's call to become a Catholic priest and serve the poor and afflicted. And the faithful were blessed with countless miracles. Order your DVD at EWTNRC.com 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or call 1-800-854-6316.
Beth, why is our health insurance so expensive? Our premium and deductible are so high. Plus, I don't want my family to support a company that doesn't share our values.
Kim, there is another option. Check out CMF Curo. It's an affordable Catholic healthcare ministry where members share their medical costs in community, and it's pro-life. We joined last year and have saved thousands, all without compromising our values. Just go to MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
CMF Curo sounds exactly like what our family needs.
Yeah, that's MyCatholicHealthcare.com.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. Join me, Teresa Tomeo, and Father John Ricardo for fun fellowship and beautiful weather during our Good News Marriage Cruise. Former NFL star Matt Burke will also be there sailing the Caribbean as we explore how to rejuvenate your marriage in Christ. We're sailing January 26th to February 1st, so call 855-879-6932. That's 855-879-6932. Or visit AveMariaRadio.net for early registration discounts.
Now, on the Ave Maria Radio app, the prayer section, where you can listen to the Holy Rosary. All four mysteries are voiced by Christ as the Answer and Father Knows Best host, Father John Ricardo. Are you struggling to remember specific prayers for pre- and post-confession, reciting the Stations of the Cross, or prayers during Eucharistic Adoration? It's all there, word for word, and within a few clicks under the prayer section on the Ave Maria Radio app. Download it on your smart device today.
Thank you so much for your calls and also your emails. Several questions came in via email that I did not even have time to get to. Appreciate the work of Ed Condon at the Catholic News Agency. Just remember that we will continue to cover this story and to keep your eyes focused on Christ. And we need to speak up respectfully and lovingly to make a difference, but we never lose our faith or our hope. More on that tomorrow on Catholic Connection. Have a beautiful Monday. See you on a Tuesday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruchek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.